Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Cosmos Magazine, the first half of 2019, evidence assessed of life on Mars. Halfway reading through this, I had a bit of interruption here. So this is the feature article, Life on Mars, the evidence assessed. Richard Lovett sits through the myths, legends, clues, facts, and red herrings. Well, there you go. Now, I have read this a little bit before, but I don't think I've read to the end of it, so I'll start this up. In 1877, the Italian astronomer Giovanni Schiaparelli turned his 21.8-centimetre telescope, one of the finest of its time, on the enigmatic disk of Mars. Scientists had long known that rather than simply being a point of light in the sky, Mars was an entire world unto itself, but Schiaparelli was the first to attempt to map in detail. He observed dark areas which he presumed to be seas, connected by linear features hundreds of kilometres long. He dubbed the latter canali, a term technically means channels, but was translated into English as canals. In 1870s, Schiaparelli mapped Mars again and again, convincing himself that the canal system was rapidly expanding, much as if advanced civilization were desperately trying to preserve the water supply in the face of drought. Even at the time, many of Schiaparelli's colleagues were dubious, wondering, in the words of the US astronomer David Wetherham in his 2018 book, Life on Mars, Princeton University, whether these features were simply the result of either bad optics in Schiaparelli's telescope or his own head. Okay, but Schiaparelli's vision captured the public's imagination. Others would even suggest that the red planet's colour were due to the ruddy vegetation, which was if it were covered with Japanese maples. In 1938, Orson Welles' radio adaptation, War of the Worlds, panicked hundreds of thousands of listeners, convincing them that the death-dealing Martian tripods were on the verge of showing up on their doorsteps. In 1976, when NASA's Viking orbiter provided the first good images of Mars, one, dubbed the Face on Mars, entered the tabloid infamy as proof of humanoid aliens once existed in our planetary neighbour, creating a giant structure that would put the ancient Egyptians to shame. We now know the Face on Mars, like the canals, was a trick of the light and shadows, but the search for life on the planet continues to tantalize. Orbiting spacecraft and landers have proven Mars was once remarkably Earth-like, with oceans, lakes, rivers, plus an atmosphere considerably denser than the thin film it is today. The red planet's earliest epoch is now officially dubbed the Noachian, a term designed to conjure up images of the vast amount of water. Today, the burning question isn't whether Mars once might have been habitable at various times in the distant past. It most certainly was. But whether it might have developed life before its climate became too cold and dry. If so, would the evidence of what astrobiologists called a second genesis of life, the first being our own, even if the second genesis never developed beyond a single-celled microorganism, it would mean that life arose at least twice in our solar system. And if it happened here, how often it might have occurred on the thousands of planets astronomers are finding circling distant stars. And how often might some of those microorganisms evolve into creatures like us? The easiest way to find life on Mars would be to multi-technical something from a science fiction writer's dream jumped out from behind a rock and waved to us. Welcome, Earthlings, here I am. Second best would be if a rover were to scoop out a soil sample and see a bench of wiggling microorganisms. But the surface of Mars is an extremely harsh environment, and signs of life, if it ever existed, could be hard to detect. But that doesn't mean there aren't a number of well-thought-out ways to hunt for it. Number one, looking for structures in rocks. On Earth, this means fossils. Dinosaur bones, says George Vogler, project scientist of the European Space Agency's ExoMars project. If you see something like that, you can tell it was alive. But sadly, that won't apply to microorganisms. You'd need an electron microscope to see them, Vogler says. And you can't fly that to Mars. Even if you could, there are little rods and spheres. There are all kinds of processes that have nothing to do with the life that can produce rods and spheres. That was exactly the problem in 1984 when a scientist found a 1.9 kilogram meteorite in the Allen Hills region of Antarctica, a meteorite that proved to be a chip blast off the surface of Mars by ancient asteroid impact. When electron microscope images showed rod-like shaped structures that looked a lot like fossilized microbes. Scientific excitement was so intense that even President Bill Clinton spoke about it in the White House briefing. And then it all went bust. Quote, "It was pretty quickly shown to be something not related to Mars life," said Abigail Alwood, an Australian geologist and astrobiologist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL, in Pasadena, California. Quote, "It was either terrestrial contamination of the rock or not biological." Since then, Alwood says other features in the Allen Hills meteorites have suggested to have been biological origins, but these too have been shot down by arguments that they could be a result of geological processes. The problem, she says, is that Mars meteorites are simply rocks ripped out of the geological settings. If we had some understanding of the context in which the rocks formed, she adds, we'd be able to determine whether the biological or abiological hypothesis was correct. The problem is the meteorites don't have the context. This problem, however, doesn't apply to rovers operating on the surface of Mars, which might be able to detect imprints left by entire colonies of microbes. Not one microorganism, says Zavago, but billions of them. These formations have been found on Earth in places like the Pilbara terrain of Western Australia. But a team led by Alwood has detected features known as stromolites, mound-like structures formed by mats of single-celled organisms in rocks 3.43 billion years old. Barker suggests that similar formations could be found on Mars, particularly in regions where were once lake bottoms, close to ash-spewing volcanoes. The way ash settles is different if there is life, he says. If there's no life, it will settle at the bottom, and layers would form roughly horizontal to the horizon. But if the colonies of microbes on the lake bottom, these microorganisms would wind up trapping sediment grains into stromolite-like structures, an imprint that tells you that microbes were there. Two, method two, biosignatures in ancient rocks. Nearly as good as finding fossils would be finding rocks containing chemicals related to life. Not that scientists would be looking for chemicals identical to our own lipids, proteins and DNAs, rather they'd be looking for remnants of whatever Mars life might have used in lieu of such chemicals. These remnants might be hardly enough to persist billions of years, even have four traits that would make them stand out. Vaco and his colleagues wrote in 2017, even if they were quite different from the chemical building blocks of early life, they are Homo chirality. Many organic molecules are asymmetrically shaped, which means they come in left-handed and right-handed versions. Abiotic processes tend to produce equal numbers of each. Biological ones only produce one or the other. Organic chemicals have been found on Mars by the Curiosity rover, which detected them. It isn't equipped to test chirality, which would be the polarization. Clustering. This is the second of so many of molecular structures and masses. Life tends to favour building blocks that fall into limited size ranges. Lipids, for example, tend to be 14 to 20 carbon range, even though there's no theoretical limit for them not to have more or fewer numbers of carbons. Similarly, the five nucleotide bases used for DNA and RNA, four on DNA and next one for RNA, have molecular weights between 112 and 151. While the amino acids, that's a bit weird, are used to make the proteins, molecular weight between 75 and 204. If you find that you have islands of compounds, Fargo says, this clustering is a biosignature. Repeating molecular subunits. Life, as we know it, likes to build chemicals in pieces, adding on subunits one at a time. We see this in proteins and DNA, but it also shows up in smaller molecules like lipids, which are assembled in two carbon units, meaning that they tend to have even numbers of carbons, 6, 14, 16, 18, and so on. Isoprenoids are components of essential oils and pigments, including chlorophyll, are assembled in 5 carbon units, even if these chemicals have been broken down over time. The degradation products retain their similar patterns. This is something that doesn't happen unless life has been involved, Fargo says. Isotopic ratios. Biological processes, at least the one we know of, tend to work significantly differently with compounds containing different isotopes of important atoms like carbon. Abiotic ones generally have no such preference. On Earth, this is the most obvious case with the two stable isotopes of carbon, carbon 12 and carbon 13, with the heavier carbon 13 isotope being disfavored. If effect isn't huge, but measurable enough that ratios of these two isotopes can be determined if the carbon-containing compounds are biological or abiological origin. It can even be used to determine if steroids or hormones of athletes suspected of being drug cheats or laboratory synthesized or produced by their own bodies. Okay, so you'd have too much carbon-13 in your artificial drugs. On Mars, any variation of the 12 to 13 carbon ratios, background level, would be a red flag for the workings of life, not geology. The third, sniffing for methane. It is possible, of course, that the future rover might scoop up living organisms rather than degraded chemicals contained in ancient rocks. But that's no problem, Vargo says. Quote, if you have a payload that's designed to detect the much more challenging signs of past life, if you were to pick up a sample containing living organisms, it would be a walk in the park to detect the chemical components of those. But another way of searching for signs of existing life is by testing the Martian atmosphere for methane. On Earth, methane is mostly produced by biological activity ranging from cow's farts to decomposing plants. But it is also produced by geological processes such as the interaction of water with a mineral called olivine, which is the main mineral we've got underneath. That's interesting. It produces it. So water and olivine releases carbon dioxide, methane. That's amazing. It's called serpentization because it produces a green coloured rock known as a serpentine. So let's work this one out again. So methane, I don't understand that. Oh, methane maybe produces carbon dioxide. I know it doesn't make sense. In 2004, ESA's Mars Express orbiter detected traces of methane in various places around the planet. But this has been frustrating, says JPL scientist Chris Webster, because each was a one-off event with no discernible pattern. Then, in 2018, Webster reported that 6 Earth years of measurements and 3 Mars years by the Curiosity rover had found atmospheric levels of methane that peaked in summer and dropped in autumn and winter. That might not be suggest that presence of methane-producing microorganisms that wake up in the that may suggest that wake up in the warm weather, then go back to hibernation in the winter. This is the first time we've seen something repeatable in the methane story, Webster says, but we don't know if it's from a rock chemistry or microbes. There's just one fly in the ointment. A few months later, at the 2018 annual meeting of the American Geophysical Units in Washington, D.C., Vargo's team reported that ESA's trace gas orbiter, which has been circling Mars since 2016, has been unable to find measurable amounts of methane anywhere in the Martian atmosphere. This does not mean that there couldn't be localized puffs of it, such as the Curiosity observed in the Gale crater, but it does raise the question of how prominent they might be on a global scale. Fourth, dig, baby, dig. One thing scientists agree on is that if there is methane on Mars, it's probably percolating up from the subsurface, either due to seasonal changes in microbial activities or, more likely, seasonal changes in the ability of the surface to allow gas to escape from the deeper down. We know that the surface of Mars is extremely inhospitable thanks to the atmosphere that's too thin to block out the harsh radiation and the high levels of oxidizing chemicals, such as perchlorates. Per is the hypo and hypo G. You've got the chlorates and chlorites. Hyperchlorate. Yeah, it's a hypochlorates in your pool. What's needed? We use perchlorates for sterilization, i.e., it's a complete sterilizer, it's an antiseptic. It's like the stuff you'd pour in a toilet duck. A planetary scientist from York University, Ontario, Canada, said that. What's needed is to peer beneath the surface beyond the reach of the damaging radiation and oxidants NASA's InSight lander, which touched down on the 26th of November 2018, will begin the process of eavesdropping on the seismic echoes or Mars quakes. Martian quakes, the vibrations of which can reveal much about the Martian interior. But the result will only be mostly of interest to deep interior geophysicists. The next step is Vlada Shdamilkovic, a planetary scientist and physicist at JPL, is to use remote sensing to look at places that might have water, then drill deep as we can. And that sounds like an immense task, but it doesn't actually require carrying tons of construction material to Mars and setting something up akin to an oil derrick. Instead, Sternwicker says, can be done with something called a wire line drill. You go as deep as you have wire, she says. There are wires where a kilometre weighs less than a kilogram. Weight can be saved, he said, and his colleagues wrote in the January Nature Astronomy. By compressing carbon dioxide from the Martian atmosphere and using it in lieu of traditional drilling fluid to flush the materials back up to the surface. What might be found down is anybody's guess, but in 2018 paper Nature Geoscience and another team led by Schoenvogt argued that we might drill into a region capable of supporting not just methane producing bacteria, but anaerobic life. I don't understand. I think methane producing bacteria are anaerobic. I think that's the entire thing. Why methane gets produced. Currently, oxygen is only 0.145% of the Martian atmosphere, compared to 12%, 21% on Earth. Okay, so Mars is 0.04 parts per billion, parts per million, ppm. Yeah, 400 parts per million. So it's less than point. It's much more oxygen, but there's much less gas there. Conditions known to occur near the surface. Sternwicker's team calculated that startling large amounts could be wind up being dissolved in brining Martian groundwater, far more than is needed to support aerobic. Okay, so he said, I said anaerobic, but aerobic life. Strange. I mean, why would you have aerobic life? Not that oxygen is the only thing these organisms would need. There are many other requirements for aerobic life, says Dave Cutting, planetary scientist at the University of Washington, Seattle. But the idea that there could be enough oxygen down there today to support a relatively complex ecosystem is nevertheless exciting. Well, the idea is traces of ancient air. Whether you're looking for present-day life itself or signs of long-gone life, a major question is whether the Martian atmosphere was ever thick enough to heat the planet sufficiently to give a chance to form, to give life a chance to form. There's abundant geologic evidence that Mars was once warm enough to have liquid water, but this did this occur over a long period of time, or intermittent epochs? It's an open question, says Moores. Enter the Martian atmosphere and volatile evolution Marvin, a NASA spacecraft that is orbiting the planet since 2014. Studying how the Martian atmosphere interacts with interplanetary space, we've been able to determine that a large fraction has been lost. I think you knew that already. So the principal investigator, Bruce Janoski, as the Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics at the University of Colorado Boulder. That sounds like evidence of an initially thick atmosphere that might have taken a while to erode, but enough to put the planet into a deep freeze. But that's not necessarily the case. It's possible that the Martian atmosphere was sometimes thick and sometimes thin, producing the type of intermediate warming and cooling suggested by Moores. I hope this bird doesn't attack me. Okay, these are very aggressive minded birds here. Think of it analogous to the money in your wallet. You can be paying out all the money, but that doesn't determine whether you had little or a lot at any time. You might be constantly replenishing your wallet from the ATM with only a few dollars at any time. It's a difference that could have been crucial to whether the planet could have ever been warm enough for a long stretch of life to have a realistic chance of getting started. Six, picking the right place. Six options. Picking the right place to look. NASA's next mission to Mars in 2020 rover is headed for a 45-kilometer wide basin known as the Jezero Crater. It was chosen because it hosted a lake with a river draining from its surrounding highlands to produce a large delta. A delta is extremely good for preserving biosignatures, be they evidence of life that may have existed in the lake water, or in the interface between the sediments and the lake water, or possibly things that were swept up by the river and deposited in the delta, says project scientist Ken Farley, who said in a late 2018 press conference, according to the space.com. But places like Jezero Delta aren't the only ones that might preserve signs of life. Martin Van Krandonk, director of the Australian Centre for Astrobiology in the University of the University of New South Wales, suggests that it's possible to look for signs of life at the types of places where life may have originated. Scientists once believed these places would have been undersea hydrothermal vents, where important chemicals are expelled from the deep in the crust. But current theory says that the hot spring pools like those in America's Yellowstone National Park probably make better candidates because, however, many interesting chemicals might be emitted by undersea vents. They don't have much time to form more complex prebiotics. They just dissipate and disappear, said Kranbock says. Hot spring pools, on the other hand, present no such problem. They also experience fluctuating water levels that produce altering wet and dry cycles. Just as thing, laboratory experiments have shown needs to cause small molecules to link together to even larger chains. They are complexity machines, says Kandonk says. I think it's really good the way he's put that. And these hot springs can produce the mineral silica, which Van Krandonk describes as the Egyptian tomb of the geological world, a perfectly preserved features including signs of life. Yeah, you can well imagine that. It's like chalk. Furthermore, the road to existed on Mars because in 2007, NASA's Spirit Rover found remnants of one location called Home Plate at the Columbia Hills region of the Gustave Craters. We think its significant genesis is likely on Mars because it was the right ingredients for what we now thought, what is now thought as the recipe for life on Earth, says Krandonk says. So there wasn't a second genesis on Mars. The open evidence we currently have is that we haven't found it yet. Okay. If life still exists, it's most likely retreated far enough underground to be invisible to the type of orbiting instruments and rovers we've used today. But it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, nor does the fact that what does mean it doesn't exist where we've looked for it. Okay. Like looking for my car keys. Nor does the fact that so far we've not found any true signatures of ancient life provide evidence that it didn't exist. Even on Earth, traces of ancient life are rare and scattered. If someday we find such traces, one of the mantras of science is that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Oh dear. In the case of life on Mars, JPL Atwood says that means that every single biological hypothesis you can come up with is going to be ruled out before it is accepted. No ifs, no buts or maybes. Evidence of life on Mars will need to be absolute proof. It's a tough task, but not, Albert believes, impossible. I think the evidence is there and life will be there, she says. It's a matter of how good a job we can do. I think there's a question, that's sort of the press going in. You can just continue to try it. But the bottom line is, it's good to go into. So I finish that for the moment and check how my kids are coming home from school.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.